the COVID protocols have been followed. So you may take off your mask if you feel comfortable to do so and you can speak better than that.
Thank you.
You have been selected as one of 20 candidates to be interviewed for the Critical Infrastructure Council. There were advertisements which were placed in the newspaper, which you applied for. From there we did a shortlist, and 20 candidates were shortlisted. You were then vetted. So the fact that you're sitting here means that you have passed the vetting.
Thank you.
So whether it was out your knowledge, we have vetted you. So when we do appoint you, out of the 20 that we interviewed today, we've been interviewing since Tuesday, yesterday and today, 10 candidates will be proposed for shortlisting to the minister. And out of the 10 that we propose, the minister will appoint 5. You will then be joined on the council by officials from Defence, Home Affairs, Public Works, Disaster Management, Local Government, SAPS and State Security Agency. In your view, could you please tell us, advocates, what you thought would make you the most suitable candidate for this position? Whether it's your qualifications, your experience, and before you do that, again, before you tell us about yourself, allow us to tell you about us. So welcome. Welcome to the panel. To my right and opposite you, it's not a jury, and I'm not a judge, so relax. We're not judges and advocates. You're the advocate, so please relax. I'll ask the members to introduce themselves, please.
Thank you, Shem. Good morning. My name is Zandile Machoni from the Inkatha Freedom Party.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. My name is Patricia Senemis Peacock from the ANC.
Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, ma'am. My name is Linda Moss. I'm from the African National Congress.
Good morning, advocates. My name is Officer Blanche, and I'm from the Democratic Alliance. Thank you.
Good morning, ma'am. My name is Henry Andres Shembeni. I'm from the Economic Freedom Fighters. Thank you.
Good morning, Advocate Corombi. My name is Kenneth Meshwe from the ACDP. Thank you.
Good morning, Advocate. My name is Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam from the National Freedom Party.
Thank you very much, Advocate. You are welcome to now introduce yourself. Your time for the interview is 1 hour. You may use your hour. You cannot get more time. You can end whenever you are happy. But your maximum time is 1 hour. It is now 10:23 and we start the interview now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to verify, should I be talking for the next hour or there will be time when you ask questions?
It's part of the complete interview with our questions and follow-ups. So you must allow us to ask questions and follow-up.
Okay.
And for that, we allocate 1 hour to you.
Okay.
So it started at 1 minute ago. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you to Honorable Members. I'm closer to the last week. I am short, so...
That's all right. I think I'm a little fellow.
Yeah, I am still a little...
Oh, my jacket, you know? My jacket, I was going to give you my jacket to sit on.
Okay, I hope it's fine now.
Yeah, much better.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I can't pull the chair, so I'm sorry. Okay, so I continued to the Department of Communications, and then I was in the Public Service and Administration for about 10 years, and that's where my interest in cybersecurity came in, because as a public service, when we talk about e-government, when we talk about e-government meaning the backbone, where we do when we have the infrastructure, and e-governance, which is the front end where public can access our services, it all boils down to the security of it, in terms of securing the infrastructure, in terms of securing the people that we are going to be interacting with. And for the 3.5 years before I left the public service to start my own consultancy, which is Oriza Consulting, focusing on cybersecurity, I was tasked to deal with the CETA procurement for the public service. So that's when I realized that the security of our systems actually starts when you do your strategic planning, because the public service regulation requires that the threat plan must also have resources and must have the IT infrastructure plan. So it means that at that point you also need to be knowing the level of your security requirements depending on the data that you're going to be passing through or storing through that infrastructure that you will be buying. So some of the things that I did, we had to redo the sourcing strategy so that it can factor the green IT and it can also factor the issues of security. So I normally follow what the Auditor General report says yearly, and the findings are more or less the same every year in as far as the IT space of the public service is concerned. And that's what motivated me to start the cyber law consultancy and offer the cybersecurity governance. So within the cybersecurity space, I am considered an ICT professional, so I understand technology very well. I remain a lawyer, so I prefer to do both within the governance space. So what we focus on is cybersecurity governance. I want to give you an example of the importance of cybersecurity governance, which informs whether whatever you're going to end up with in terms of infrastructure will be secured or not. There is a company in the USA that is called SolarWind. SolarWind is a company that we can say is a backbone for that provides a software for other companies to manage their IT resources. It is alleged, so I'm clear, that the hacking was funded by the Russian government, so it was an espionage. They were monitoring a whole lot of the main departments of the USA for about 12 months. It was only found out last year, December, when FireEye, one of the cybersecurity company in the USA that is in the backbone of this SolarWinds, found some anomaly in their system. And that was the only time that everybody started realizing that there was an invasion. We call it a Trojan horse. I believe you know about the Troy story. Yes. So in the ICT space, it's also called the Trojan horse. So when you have a software like Microsoft, was one of the companies that was affected because it's also working through the SolarWinds system. So what they do is that when there is a system, they will normally send what we call updates. you will see if you use WhatsApp or Facebook, there's a timeline that will say update. So if you know that you are receiving this message from a trusted place, you will click yes. But when they clicked yes, the Trojan was also inserted on the system. So through the solar winds, most, they say about out of 33,000 customers of SolarWinds, about 18,000 were affected, including the U.S. military department and the Microsoft, Google, Cisco, some of the companies that we use in South Africa. So I'm very interested in making sure that when we do what we do as South Africans, we actually are understanding that it's not just an issue of buying a system. And by the way, in South Africa, we produce nothing in the IT space. We are importing everything. So it's important that, since I'm one of the people who understand how things work, to be part of the council, because, as I said, it starts from the strategic planning. Why do we need the system for? Why do we need the infrastructure for? Why do we need what we need in the IT space? Because when we have answered those questions, we are able to then do the cybersecurity governance that I've spoken about, to say what are the requirements. Like now we have the POP. When it is talking about cybersecurity safeguards, what safeguards are we going to need for the particular system that we're going to need? So if we're just going to import from, we call them off the shelf, so you are going to buy it from the shelf as it's being sold to you, then it means we're in danger, because we have not said what is in the system and what is it that we need, because you need to do data classification to be able to decide what type of...
Advocate, if you continue like this, there will be no questions.
I'm about to conclude.
No, I'm telling you, you're doing so well. By the time you finish the first question, I'm convinced there will be nothing left for this panel to ask you.
Okay. And thank you, Chair. Yeah, I believe that's the background. So what I'm trying to tell you is that I know the IT space very well, and I know the legal space very well. So I'm multidisciplinary in a sense, and I have been accepted finally, because I've been trying to get a supervisor to supervise my PhD on cybersecurity. But most of the lecturers are just normal lawyers, and I am a cyber lawyer. So I finally found a cyber lawyer. My topic is going to be the legal aspect of cybersecurity within e-governance. As I said, how we service our people through IT is very important. Thank you.
You have said quite a mouthful. It's a very rare combination. Mm-hmm. It's a woman, it's an advocate doing cyber security.
Thanks, Jim.
Very proud of you. Shake him up. If he asks you many questions, it's a compliment. Honorable Shake him up.
Thank you. Yes, very impressive, no doubt about it, Chair. I think based on everything you've told us, how would you balance that if you were appointed on this council together? Would you want to do your PhD, which is a great thing, and your law practice and whatever it is? You can just, you know, in other words, convince us that it's not going to impact negatively on your appointment if you are appointed to be on the council.
Thank you, honorable member. No, it's not going to be interfering with anything. For me, it's the contribution I want to make to my country, and cybersecurity is what I do in my company. So it means that, oh, and by the way, my PhD, I was advised to say I need to do something that my company is already doing. So it's not like I will be doing something that I'm not aware of. The thing with my PhD is that I'm not going to be doing the desktop research. I am going to do the practical field research, where I can go and say, why is Africa not doing what we're supposed to do in as far as cybersecurity is concerned? Because even when I looked at the X, we are more concerned about the physical part of it. America, we saying the knowledge that I'm gaining from what I do in my company, the knowledge that I'm gaining from what I'll be doing in the research will actually be benefiting the council. So there's not going to be like, she needs to be here and she needs to be there, no. I know that Mauritius is the best in the world, it's in the top 10, it's the best in Africa. So one of my targeted countries to go to is Mauritius. And the whole intention is that if I get it right, South Africa gets it right. And this committee for me was like, wow, so there's something like this, I need to be part of it. So, yeah, I hope that I'm doing.
So you thought, oh, these gogos and madalas are finally getting it right. Look at her, she's agreeing with me that we're all gogos and madalas. You know, Honorable Majority, she'll be very offended. She's the age of my daughter. Honorable Peacock, I'm the gogo here. Anyway, thank you very much, Honorable Peacock. You may ask your question.
Thank you so much, Chair. Oh, I'm so impressed, eh? my question would be, what is your understanding of critical infrastructure and why should critical infrastructure in our country be protected?
Thank you, Honorable Member. Critical infrastructure is the infrastructure that we cannot afford not to have it, and we cannot afford not to have it working. An example was the city of Joburg was hacked during AFEC. It was a bit embarrassing for all of us in the IT space. And the hackers, they wanted, when we call it a ransomware, it means it's a malware that locks everything, you can't do anything. So it's also a denial of service. So critical infrastructure for me is that infrastructure that makes services happen. So if we don't have the water infrastructure, the electricity infrastructure, even city power was also locked out. Last year we had the court not working for about 2 months or something like that because the system was out. So the critical infrastructure is what makes life happen, service happen, business happen, economy go. And obviously if we can't protect it, then we are in danger of not being considered the, you know, when they say the rate has the jump state and the what. So yeah, it doesn't make us very economically valuable and it puts us at risk nationally because you are naked now, okay, in the IT space, not physically. Anybody can come in and do what they want to do, like what these Russian people are doing with the Americans. They are not doing anything for now. They are just collecting intelligence and nobody knows what they are going to do. If they can just shut down the whole of America then. So that's the reason why it is critical to protect our information and we mind who we buy it from.
Thank you very much, Honorable Peacock, Honorable Shembeni.
Thank you very much. Ma'am, I just want to find out from you if do you think that the public should be allowed into the critical infrastructure? And do you think the public should be allowed into the critical infrastructure and be free to take photographs? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I believe according to the Act, the public may be allowed into a critical infrastructure on a controlled basis. So obviously you cannot just pitch as a public person to a critical infrastructure without a reason. So if your reason is not valid, I believe the Act is also providing that you can be denied access. So I believe that the people who are in control of the critical infrastructure need to be taught well to know how to control the incoming and going of anybody who is not necessarily linked to the critical infrastructure as an employee or somebody controlling it. Taking picture is definitely no. So it will then go back to the people who are controlling, and I believe the Act provides for the appointment of the security manager. So the people who are appointed really from a security perspective, hopefully, as I said, that is most to do with physical, but you need to be aware that in the ICT space, I can come with something like a SIM card, and that SIM card can actually do a whole lot of things than a camera that you can see. So we need a whole lot of intelligence to go with the place that is declared as critical infrastructure. So in the ICT space, we can do anything anywhere. We can have something hovering over your critical infrastructure. So we, from a technical perspective or cyberspace, we need to think broader than just a physical human being coming into the building. Thank you.
When you are done with me, I will have a different view of life. Any person who has a follow-up question to that, you will now not be interested in getting physical tags as visitors. You just know someone is busy with a drone here listening to your interview. Honorable Meshu and then Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Chairperson, maybe she needs to explain a little more on what she said about you don't necessarily need a physical camera, but with a just a SIM card. How can a SIM card be used without a physical thing like a camera or a cell phone? How do you use a SIM card when it's not in a phone or in a phone?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Meshu. I said something like a size of a SIM card. So I was just showing to say I can come in with a chip and I'm able to do a whole lot of things. I can come in with my chip and I'm looking around, but I'm actually inserting cameras. You know, those chips are like something that you can't even see. Some chips you can even put on your laptop or on your computer, and or we can put them on your server. You won't be able to see it. That chip will be able to tell us what we need to know when we are not there. So what I'm saying is that the physical... Oh, we have things we call Internet of Things. I believe you might have heard of those. So Internet of Things, you'll find that soon you won't need your phone, or because your watch can actually do a lot of things. I can come wearing a watch and you think, oh, yes, a nice watch. No, actually it's not a watch. I won't be taking pictures with the watch and you think he's looking at the time. No, I'm not looking at the time. I'm actually taking pictures of the things that I believe now this is where we'll get more information. So that's what I'm saying, like in the tech world, if we're just gonna be physical, it's not gonna help us, because there is a whole lot of things that I can, even if you say leave my phone there, I don't mind leaving my phone, because my watch is going to do the work for me. So I'm just saying that, oh, I can wear a chip. They can put a chip on my call biometric. So there's just a whole lot of things that in the IT space we need to protect, because when I was reading the Act, I was like, no, this Act is too much physical, and what we want to protect, like the examples I gave you, your bag was put out for 2 weeks. They didn't even know what was the problem, whatever, and it was ransomware, you pay us or we publish whatever. You will know that experience. There was no physical entry there. Somebody picked a call and said, I'm the CEO of this company. We call it social engineering in the IT space. We need, you know, like they do credit, whatever checks when you want to buy a car, whatever. So they're thinking, oh,
we are talking to the CEO of this big company, they think, oh, big money is coming. And only to find out later that actually Experian gave the data to cybercriminals. And there was no one who came at the... They just picked up a call. So I'm just saying that in the technology world, we understand things way bigger than the physical things that we're obsessed with, even with our borders. People don't need to be at the border. They can come in anyhow because the internet space is borderless. I hope that answers the question. Thanks.
I'm glad Honorable Majority, because I thought it's because I'm a go-go.
No.
Thank you. Honorable Shekima.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sometimes I'm wondering whether Doctor is not a advocate, is not a American spy or something on Russia, because you know so much what's going on. I'm no ally of the United States anyway. What do you believe is the role of the police and the security agencies? And I think you covered part of it when you talk about intelligence and things, but other security agencies, including South African police, defense and other institutions, particularly when we're talking about the infrastructure and its protection there of the risks attached to it.
Thank you, Chair. First, I need to make it known to the honorable members that as South Africa, we import everything, okay? So our number one problem is skills. So I can tell you that within the police service, that's what was excited about this, being a member of this committee. We do not equip and capacitate our police officials to be able to do this kind of, because I was thinking with the solar wind hacking, the Trojan horse that was put in the US, if it was us, were we even going to know? And even if we know, can we say that our police and our security agencies have the skills to actually investigate that particular Trojan horse that was inserted and to know its origin? So I would recommend that our training goes beyond the normal police training and normal security agency training, because we're no longer physical now. I believe that the honorable members will note that with the COVID-19, we were really exposed. You know, Parliament was exposed badly. Yeah, I mean, it's showing how bad we don't have the skills, and we are totally reliant on the imports. So my recommendation would be the committee must advise the executive to invest more on training that will be responding to 2021 requirements.
Advocate, can I just take you to the Federal Firearm Registry? Those people have a forest of paper which is registering our firearms. This country doesn't know who has which firearm. That's how desperate we are in police. The Central Firearm Registry, where we register each and every firearm, including who owns the firearm, is done manually. And you get into the boardroom. The boardroom is filled with paper. The paper is taller than you. You're very short for that paper. You'll get lost in the paper. Five floors of paper. Taller than you. So anyway, I'm going to ask Honorable Majosi. I'm sure you understand that this interview actually lecturing us. Eh?
Yeah, we're going through an induction now. This is a total workshop. But anyway, because we have to ask this question, and but it's very informative. What the information that you're giving us, wow, like, we could use the skills. In your opinion, what are the key challenges facing the council, and what role should the council play in strengthening critical infrastructure?
This is where you're going to
you
go.
Have already you've answered quite a bit of it. So what you've said already, as I'm saying, you know, you've covered all our questions. So please, if you want to be short now, you are welcome. I'm not giving you preferential treatment. But there are some people, they can speak a lot and say very little. Now, you have a habit of saying, in everything you've said, I've listened. So, advocate, when you answer, please also take into account that you have answered the question.
Thank you so much. I believe that the challenges that is facing the council now is to know the status of the critical infrastructure, because it's not possible to protect something you don't know. So I believe that even though it is in the Act, I would recommend that should be the first thing that the council does, because it is very challenging for you to protect something like with the SolarWinds one. They don't even know the extent of how these hackers have, this Trojan has been collecting information, how much has gone where. So it's easier to deal with a problem when you know what it is. And as Chairperson was saying, the issue of the manual things, they don't work in the 21st century. So if we say we are declaring this to be a critical infrastructure, but everything that you have is just manual, it's not easy to know what still exists, who picked which file. And so we will need to do an assessment of what's available, what challenges do whatever we have posed on us. And I think that is a huge task. And the role for me goes beyond what was written in the Act. We can't just be here to declare. We need to be bringing skills in terms of how can government move forward and be able to protect itself. Like when you look at the U.S., I like using examples of U.S. because it's considered a big economy. So if they are experiencing problems, and by the way, it's on the top 5 of companies that hack or attack that's been China, Russia, Israel, and Korea. And Korea is a very small country to us. So, but I'm saying we can learn a lot from other countries like the U.S. and what they call critical infrastructure security agency. It's something that is not even provided for in the Act. I don't know where it exists, but I know I've never heard of it in South Africa. So the role of the council will have to be bringing serious recommendations to say how do we make our critical infrastructure secured. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sir Blanche.
Thank you, Chairperson Advocate. Advocate, welcome you once again. I just want to say something before I put the question to you, because we need to do that. I spent my whole life in the environment of criminal law, and both of them are still very important. If you see what is happening at the Zondo Commission, it is terrible to say the least. But coming back to you, you haven't been born to operate in the criminal law environment. You are born with an assignment, and that is where you are. So I'm going to ask you the question, and I think that you have covered it extensively, sir. If you feel that there's something that you think should be added still, you're welcome to do that, because I need to ask you the question anyway. So here's the question. Let me just get my spectacles. Name the key...
And don't be surprised if there's a chip in your spectacle.
No, she wasn't near me. So maybe something is hovering, I don't know. Anyway, name the key strength from a technical and leadership perspective which you will bring to the CIC. I think you've covered that. If you are appointed, what do you think are your areas of growth? I also think that you convinced us already. So merely if you think there's still something, very briefly, that you feel that still you still want to add, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, another poor John Maxwell, I like him. I follow his leadership. I read his books. And one of the books he wrote was a 360-degree leader. So a 360-degree leader is somebody who leads from the bottom, who leads your peers from the middle, and who leads who leads the honorable members. So I am that kind of a person in as far as leadership is concerned. And the late Tata Madiba wrote, okay, he was speaking in one of his videos, and he said something that I took for myself. If you want to see something change, that change must begin with you. So I am that person in terms of leadership. So if I see something wrong, it doesn't help me to complain. That's why I applied for this Critical Infrastructure Council membership, because I can only be a leader when I'm making myself known to say I'm here to give leadership. So I hope that answers the question. My strength, I think, as I said earlier, I'm multidisciplinary, I understand the tech world, and I said, so you are covered there. Area of growth, within the ICT space, you can never say you are done. If you are done, you are dead. So I will always be learning. From the cyber law space, as you said, you know now that the president just signed the cybercrime bill into an act. So that is an area of learning now, and my supervisors are saying I need to put it in my proposal. So when I do my research, I can also see how far that act will take us somewhere. So I'm a continuous learner or a lifetime student. When my peers meet me, like, what are you studying now? So everybody is always wanting to see what is you studying now, because I always need to be on the know. In this area of work, you cannot afford to not to be on the know. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm not going to ask more questions. I'm just, it's just you and Honorable Moss. So I'm not going to take follow-up questions. I'll give Honorable Meshu one more. Just those three questions. So you speak of the cybercrime bill that is now an act, but the cybersecurity bill has not yet been passed. So even though it's not with police, it has serious implications for police. So what would you think that you'd recommend for the cybersecurity and the difference between cybercrime and cybersecurity?
That's a tricky question. Okay.
You're saying I'm asking a tricky question.
No. It's just that there's a lot of, I don't want to call it political, but in our space, which is the cyber space or ICT space, we have what we call vested interest. So you'll find that certain things are not going accordingly because of vested interest. I personally did not understand why we are now separating the two bills. That was number one. If we were to separate them, I never understood why they were not moving parallel. Because the one thing we want to achieve is cyber security. But to achieve the cyber security, you actually need to say, when is it breached? Then you have the cyber crime that will say, we will punish you if you do this. Because you need to create as a Honorable Reverend was saying to say that the cyber law, which obviously, sorry, criminal law, which then obviously in our 2021, we will now be calling it a cyber crime law, because that's where we are able to, like when I look at criminal Special Procedure Act, I'm like, it's still existing, 1977, but anyway, I'm not here for that. But in my view, we should have run them parallel. And if we are not running them parallel, I'm hoping the president is signing the cyber security bill in the next week or so, because then you have the right balance. So if you just have these are the crimes, but you are not even creating the environment, then, because that's the governance I was telling you earlier, the cyber security act. It's creating the governance to say, this is our state in as far as cyber security is concerned. But if you are just listing for me the crimes and the penalties, then we have solved the problem half. I can say 25%, because I will give it to us more building and creating a cyber secure space, which would have come through the cyber security bill. However, we do have phobia. So for now, I think we can deal with this cyber crime act with phobia, because for me, I think if we follow phobia, because it's based on the European law, we can achieve much. The challenge that I have had here is that we are good with laws, but implementation becomes our biggest challenge. But as I said earlier when I was starting, most of our challenges is the skills, and we import the skills as well. When I was a public servant, I said 3.5 years I was supposed to do ICT procurement for the public service through CETA. And I needed to do cost management, and one of the things I decided to do was to say how much I was spending on what. And on skills alone, I think by 2017 we were spending over 10 billion per annum, which is a minimum, because you have to remove that. You must remove defense. No municipalities were there, no section 9, so it was just purely the public service. So that was the daily minimum that I could find, only on imported skills, 10 billion. Thanks.
Thank you, advocate. You know, I seldom invite, in fact, in my period as the chairperson of this committee, there are many, many people on a daily basis who, in fact, they even demand that they want to do presentations to the committee. And I don't allow them, you know, because everybody thinks they're an expert. So they do their submissions to me and they demand that I bring them to the committee to do a presentation. But certainly you can expect an invitation from this committee for you to do a presentation. Because I see you are so passionate. You know, we are sitting from police station. They take down an affidavit manually. And when they do a criminal document, it doesn't assist us in court. Criminals get away with bail hearings because we don't have that expertise in our police stations when it comes to criminal law. And how to take down a statement. Even our forensic science laboratories, the crime scene analysis is compromised. This committee has been seized with the fact that our forensic science analysis, that just the chain of evidence and the proof of evidence, how the evidence has exchanged hands, that even that could compromise us severely. That backlogs in DNA analysis and DNA testing. So I think you'd be horrified if you should know what we listen to as a committee on a daily basis. So I'm only because your hour is seriously now going to be running out very quickly. And as I'm saying to you, you will be given an opportunity to come and brief us. Where this committee, I think the full committee, will be given an opportunity to engage with you. Because you are answering a number of the questions which we have been asking all along. I can spend the whole day speaking to you. This committee, we've even been questioning the validity and accuracy of our crime statistics. I'm sure when you look at those crime statistics, you are saying this is really just something which is outdated.
That's why I use the word minimum. So whatever we see is the minimum of what really exists. Yeah.
Very quickly, Honorable Sheikh Imam and then Honorable Meshu and then Honorable Moss. Not very long, please.
Thank you, Chair, for particularly for that invitation, because one of the major causes of crime, particularly in the country, is on this WhatsApp where criminal syndicates operate, and there's no way we can trace them. It takes a year or two. So thank you very much for that, Chair. My one concern, and then I have a question for you. My concern is you've got vast experience, particularly on cyber security, which is needed very badly by this particular council, and you are correct. The other, do you have any, how would you, remember there's also physical threats, physical security that we have to worry about, and you talk about cyber that seems to have been covered. How would you balance that to make sure that that's also that you fit in terms of your skills and leadership to be able to ensure that there's physical security plus you deal with cyber security, which I'm quite confident. And lastly, the question is, we have a lot of challenges in the country worldwide, but South Africa can't afford it, but we are experiencing great difficulty in terms of corruption, maladministration, and whatever it is in the country, theft and looting. Can you tell us if ever, at any stage, you've been charged criminally for any criminal offences, fraud, corruption, theft, maladministration, whether you've appeared before any disciplinary committee for gross insubordination or not attending to work regularly, anything of that nature, very shortly, very quickly.
Honorable Sheikh Imam, I'm sorry, as my younger son said, I'm sorry to burst your bubble. But with the technology that she understands, and this is very difficult to get. Thank you, Doc.
Okay. I immediately wrote blockchain, thinking that you were asking me if it's a solution, but it seems the question on corruption is to look at me. No, I had, as I said, when I was working on the public service procurement, which you all know about, Sita, it's billions of USD worth of contracts which I was running. You can easily be bought. So I was not one of those. And I believe after fixing the environment, that's when I decided I need to leave. Because, yeah, the 3.5 years made me grow older than my age. So when I look at the Zondo Commission, as you say, there are areas that I thank God for having protected me throughout. Because where I was, I could have been killed. Because I prevented people to do corruption. I work by the book. So when we come to good governance, I make everybody's life in a way complicated because we have to do it like this. Even when I was working with executives and they requested something, that actually I would be reported to my executives by service providers to say this girl, can you deal with this girl? So because of meeting, I'll go and attend this girl. No, remember, because I look very young, so people say I'm a girl. I was an intern in 2002. They're still calling me that intern. So because of the way I am vocal about things, I believe in justice. So I am where I am, obviously, by the grace of God, but I also believe in integrity. So whatever I do in our industry, if you mess up once, you are dead for life. So I don't have any backup to be where I am today. My only backup is God. So I just want you to understand me in that context, that when it comes to corruption, this council will not have any. And I know the tricks from the industry, so they will be thought I should start with that one. The physical, I believe with, okay, I think here in Parliament you have a server room. Nobody should enter that server room except for somebody who is allowed. The one challenge that I need to highlight to you is that we don't do vetting for the people who enter the server room. That's why you'll find that we import these girls from wherever they come here. They go to our servers. You don't know what they're putting there. So we need to do the same thing you did for us before we even come for an interview. You need to do for everyone from a physical perspective to say who enters the data center, who enters the server room, everywhere where our critical infrastructure is. It should not be wonky wonky going there because I'm in IT, I must go. No, there must be delegations. We know that you are just fixing the, you know, we will call them the under the table. It means you are just fixing the cable. And there are the strategic ones that need to be going into these areas. So even in our space, where there is a data center, there is a physical requirement for somebody to be there. So even in our space, we don't exclude the physical security. It's just that I will say I love the physical security because the Act is talking about physical security from page 1 to page last. So that's what I was emphasizing on the cyber physical security, which is not covered, because that needs to be taken very seriously. If we were to compare physical security, I might not give it a very high percentage. As I said, anybody can enter that server room, so they don't need to be there physically. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't think we still need a stakeholders question. Your question has been answered. All our questions have been answered. I don't think you want to ask us more questions. You've given us more questions than answers. I've been asking for someone on side of security to brief this committee since I walked in, because there's no way in which we can even consider fighting crime if you do not look at cyber crime and cyber security. We are focused, yes, it's important that we look at gender-based violence, but you can, in fact, you can see a mile away where there's a likelihood. If you study, there are so many systems that you can study, that you can predict crime even long before it is as occurred. You just through the exchanges of someone's mobile phone, you can know that this one is a threat to society. So if you have cyber crime in such a way that the communication that someone sends out is threatening and that is a criminal offense, you can apprehend the offender even before he has committed something physically. So that is the kind of questions that we'd like to ask you and the engagement that we'd like to have with you. So thank you very much for presenting you for the interview. I hope that your arrangements were well taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And then just in future, please ma'am, I have a bias towards everybody who's from Gauteng. So when you put in your interview, when you put in your CV, can you put the originally from Limpopo? So when we call you, we know this is not a Gauteng person, this is someone from originally from Limpopo, you see. Because we start becoming biased, we say everybody will be brought for an interview is from Gauteng. And it's a breath of fresh air to know that this person I interviewed was from Limpopo. I have nothing against Gauteng, but you see, we look at the geographic spread. So we don't want all the committee members to be from Gauteng, because obviously that's when the critical infrastructure becomes Gauteng.
thank you very much. It has been a pleasure meeting you on behalf of the panel. You know, under Nation, I can never refuse you because you can just switch off my blessing. So please, you're the only one who can speak after the chair.
Thank you, Professor. Obviously, if she's not part of the council, we will toy-toy.
What?
We will toy-toy.
Under foundation, you are being live recorded.
You must scratch out this one. You must delete this one. Having listened to what she has to say about cyber security and the fact that all the units we use info, even for our own security, securing our own data, we take it from the shelf. And the way it's sent to South Africa, we take it from the shelf not knowing that there is a particular interest in monitoring and getting information about South Africa. So would you agree if I say we are vulnerable because we don't know whether we are monitored, we don't know whether we are hacked at this stage, because if America, which we thought had a powerful and excellent cyber security infrastructure, could be hacked and for the year monitored, what about us in the peak of Africa? It's possible that we are very, very vulnerable. Now we are going to face elections. We heard that the American elections were hacked from Italy.
Honorable Nation, you know, I told you she's coming to meet you in the committee. Can you take her number, please?
Her number?
You can take her number.
Okay, thank you. Maybe the last.
No, I mean, really, everybody in this committee would like to talk to you. I can just see, there's not a single one. Even Shembeni, I can just see the way Shembeni is. When I schedule you to come and speak to the committee, and I schedule you for at least 4 or 5 hours, look at Shaky Mom.
I'm the only single person.
I'm the only single person.
She's not single, Shepard. Look at the finger.
She's not single, Shaky Mom.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. The thing is, research says South Africa is the 6th in the world cyber targeted country for attacks. So
what?
We are number 6 of targeted countries.
Yes,
we are 6. I think if they do it in milliseconds, it's like every second there is a whole lot of damage happening. And the fact that we're only establishing the council now, that will mean we are not necessarily aware of our vulnerability. As I said, I don't know of any agency that is tasked by South Africa to say you are dealing with the cyber security of the country. And I would like to suggest as well for this honorable member to suggest to the executives. When it comes to IT, it's not a luxury. It is a must-have. And when you decide to engage in the cyberspace, cybersecurity is not a luxury. It's something that you need to function. Otherwise, you can be shut down anytime. That's why my son, that sometimes they say the parliament website is down. Sometimes it's just hacked. So we say it's down, covering up that we have been exposed. So we are in a way naked and we are vulnerable. So I'm emphasizing this not because I love my country, I love Africa. That's why my PhD research is in African perspective, because if we are okay, but the rest of Africa is not okay, we are still not safe. Yeah. So my view is that if we are the 6th country targeted in terms of cyber attacks, then we are very vulnerable. We are actually naked. We just don't know if we are left with anything directly, but yeah.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your humility. You know, because if you are saying that you are offering, it is a sacrifice that you're offering to your country. Now that is what patriotism is all about. That you say, I'm here because of my country and I'm ready to give back to my country. In fact, you're not even asking what is the remuneration. It's your time and your expertise that you're giving to us. So thank you very much, advocate, and travel safely. And please leave us your latest details to Sutu. Because you one person that says, hey, we don't even want to go look on your CV, what is your details? We want your details on speed dial. Thank you very much, advocate. Honorable members, I would like to bring to you... You can't breathe. There is no one sitting on your neck. Thank you very much, advocate. We'll take a short break. Honorable members, it is now 11:23. We gave her exactly an hour. We started 10:23. We finished 11:23. And I'm sure if I didn't stop you, you would go now on to 12:23. I don't think Shetty Mama is going now to 12:23. That I can see. Could you switch off the recording to see, please?